Hi, and welcome to ArcCast. We're broadcasting today from the TechEd Online studios at TechEd 2009 North America. And my guest today is the esteemed man for all seasons, Simon Guest. Simon.
Hey, Jimmy.
Great to see you. Thank you for coming in to talk to us today.
Thank you for having me.
I think you should put man for all seasons on your business card. I think that would be something that, you know, and then give me credit.
I would take that away.
So you've been with Microsoft for a while. What are you doing these days at Microsoft?
So I work in the Developer and Platform Evangelism Group, DPE. As you probably know, this is the same group that runs Channel 9 and PTC and Mix. And I've been doing a lot of work recently with customers who are thinking about moving to the cloud and thinking about it in a way that's more beyond the marketing speak and more beyond the kind of the whiteboard to actually looking at what that really means.
Looking for practical guidance on how to get there.
Absolutely, yep.
So you're speaking this week about that exact topic.
That's right.
And the talk that you gave, I believe, earlier today is focused on how you take existing applications that you have in your infrastructure and how do you get those out to the cloud. So I guess the first question that comes out from these types of things is, I too have been out talking to customers. They're interested in Azure. Mm-hmm. It's a little scary, you know, because the cloud thing in and of itself is a little amorphous. I don't know what that means. And the first thing I say is, well, I have a lot of investment in my existing infrastructure, and I'm a little intimidated moving everything to the cloud. Now, the first question we should ask is it kind of an all or nothing proposition with Azure?
Right. That's a common comment from many customers. And I think one of the things that many customers I'm working with are realizing is that there tends to be kind of three states of thinking about where applications live. So applications, of course, live on-premise. Mm-hmm. So this is where an organization owns its own data center and looks after and buys its own machines. There is, of course, the hosting model. So this is where I pay a host to effectively rent machines. To some degree, and I pay, I know, $20, $30 a month, and that's typically used for kind of the public site. And then, of course, we have this cloud platform. And I think one of the important things for organizations to realize is it's not an all or nothing thing. One of the key things an organization needs to do today is look at the applications they have and then decide, well, where are these best suited? Mm-hmm. So there are going to be some applications that, hey, they live on-premise today, and that's good, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be other applications that work very well in the hosting environment. And I think there's going to be equally applications that work very well in the cloud. And I think good organization or good strategy is about working out which types of applications work well where.
Yeah, that makes total sense because it lets you leverage the investment you've already made in your own on-site infrastructure, but then lets you kind of burst up and take advantage of some of the things that the cloud, that Azure itself has to offer. So I guess the question, once you answer that, the next question that comes up is, well, what kind of applications does it make sense for me to move to the cloud versus keep on-premise?
So in the talk this morning, which I believe is also available online, I kind of ran through a portfolio of applications from a pharmaceutical. Mm-hmm. And we looked at some of the applications that, say, a typical organization of that size would have. And these ranged from a CRM and email system. And we showed something called transference, which is thinking about, well, how do I take, say, CRM or email that's on-premise today and kind of push that out to a software as a service model. Mm-hmm. But then also looking at some of the different types of applications that a pharmaceutical may run. So, for example, some MRI imaging software. Sure. You could argue that that has to deal with gigabytes worth of image data. Well, is there something in the cloud that makes sense there? Or another good example I used this morning was a molecular research kind of application. This is one of these applications that has a good a demand or a thirst for compute, mm-hmm. but for short periods, maybe at the end of every month. So very similar to like tax applications,
sure.
where
mm-hmm.
they kind of run 3 or 4 weeks before April the 15th mm-hmm. here in the US, but for the rest of the year,
scale down.
Kind of
mm-hmm.
scale down, they're kind of dormant almost. And one of the questions I was trying to answer in the talk, and hopefully I did answer, is whether the cloud is suitable for those types of applications.
Okay, all right. So I guess then the kind of result of these questions that you've been asking is you're proposing five patterns and you're calling them patterns for moving existing applications to the cloud. Now, are these architectural patterns? Are they deployment migration patterns, or are they more a descriptive type of, you know, like a set of characteristics for the types of applications that make sense to run in these different environments?
Currently, it's a mix, okay. I believe. We can run through the patterns if we have time. So pattern one is really about transference.
Mm-hmm.
And this really is looking at, I've got an application running on-premise. What does that look like in the cloud?
Okay.
So that, in regards to your question, it is really about migration.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Saying, hey, this pattern runs locally on-premise. What does it look like in the cloud? And then, more importantly, are there bits of the application I don't want to push out? So
okay,
maybe identity and authentication. I kind of like to keep that on premise.
Mm-hmm.
So then, well, how do we create that link back from the application into the cloud that's been deployed in the cloud back to our on-premise data center?
And specifically, transference is the first pattern you talk about.
Correct.
And I know one of the things there, too, that you have to be aware of is, so the idea is I have this application running on-premise today. How easily can I simply take that and move that with, you know, without? So another part of that, you mentioned identity management. Now, the other thing you have to think about there is what's specific to my environment that even if I want the cloud to manage identity, what do I have to move into that environment as well, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay.
Identity is one example. I think there's many other customizations as well,
mm-hmm.
especially when you're looking at moving a packaged on-premise application to a packaged kind of cloud or software as a service application. You may have a vanilla email instance, mm-hmm. or you may have a vanilla CRM instance that may move very easily. But if you've kind of put chocolate sprinkles over the top, you've kind of got add-ins and
there's a lot of whipped cream out there.
Scripts and all kinds of customizations. Well, one of the first things I think organizations need to do is make sure that these are going to be well supported in the cloud as well.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So that's pattern number one is transference.
Right.
Now, the second pattern you talk about is scale and multi-tenancy. Now, this seems like it should be pretty self-explanatory, but from the standpoint of the patterns that you're putting forth here, what does that mean to people? How should people think about that?
So the second pattern I was looking at in the presentation was really looking at the web tier of an application running in the cloud and saying, well, how does that scale? And one of the things I think is really important with Azure, but with the cloud in general, is that we kind of differentiate the web tier from the actual worker tier, i.e. the presentation from the business logic.
Okay.
And by doing that, we're able to achieve scale in two places. So you can achieve scale on the incoming web requests, so the number of pages served, the number of incoming clients, and pages kind of return to users.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have a different, yet complementary scale engine on the back end. And really, pattern two, we're saying, well, how do we achieve this scale today? So we covered things like running things like in a stateless mode, but then also looking at how Azure kind of handles that today in terms of, well, how do I dial up the number of instances on an as-need basis?
Gotcha. Okay. So when you're talking about the web and the worker roles, kind of like the web and the application tier of a typical interior web architecture. So one example, and I always try to think of these things in the concrete, like how would we, if you had a site, for example, where you had a service that maybe searched for products on your site, and that service was primarily consumed by the web tier, okay, and you've built that and it scales and it's fine for what it's doing today, but then you say, well, really what I want to do is expose that service endpoint to multiple channel partners. So perhaps I create strategic partnerships with other companies that I want them to show my products on their website. And I want mm-hmm. them to consume that service. That would be a good instance of being able to drop that into the cloud, into that worker as a worker application.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah. I mean, so to give the example that I showed this morning,
mm-hmm.
which may touch on that as well. Imagine one of these viral websites. So you as an organization, you have an idea for a website. And you're not quite sure whether it's going to take off or not.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, it may be a complete disaster. And then on the other hand, it may be the next Facebook. And the chances are there's probably going to be somewhere in between
that's
going to be reality. Now, the question is, when you're designing for that, whether it's on-premise or whether it's in the cloud, you kind of have a couple of options. One option would be to imagine how big this could ever get and then just scale up. So,
and that's what people tend to do today, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we think this is going to hit about 10,000 users. Therefore, let's buy X number of servers and set up X databases so that we can handle 10,000 users from day one.
Sure.
And the reality is it may reach 10,000 users, and that would be great. But for the first few days, few weeks and months, it's going to have this slow cycle. I think one of the things the cloud enables when it comes to web scale is you can take the same application and the same pattern, you can move it to the cloud, and then the dialing up and down becomes somewhat aggregated or separated from that.
Okay.
So, okay, well, we'll start with one instance, and that may serve, I know, 10, 20, 30 users. And then as things look like they're reaching capacity, well, let's bring another instance online. Mm-hmm. And then, well, let's bring another 5 or another 10.
Right.
And you start to see this kind of very flexible scale out without having to make that capital investment from day one.
And you don't have the ongoing maintenance and oversight of it, because really all you're
of
doing
course.
Is turning on instances and you're outsourcing that to the cloud.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes complete sense. So related to that, pattern 3 is this thing that you call burst compute.
Right.
And that sounds a lot like something that would be related to scalability and multi-tenancy. So what's the differentiation in those two
patterns? So this is kind of the other end of the spectrum. So you have this, as I described, this kind of viral website that kind of expands on the front end. There are a lot of tasks that I think are specifically suited for the cloud that require the same scale on the back end, mm-hmm. or on the compute end. So a couple of good examples that we kind of showed this morning in a follow-up session. One was a prime number solver. So if you think of the math and the logic that needs to go into solving prime numbers, it's actually fairly complex. And having a mechanism where I can take that logic and scale it out with the same ease that I can scale out a web farm is kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
A second example that a colleague showed was with image processing. So again, let's say I'm taking a photographer, I'm taking formats in RAW, format on an SLR. So I'm getting probably a 10 meg image or 10 meg file size for each image. If I push that to an application in the cloud, then you could imagine having a compute layer that took that raw image and then basically recalculated or reprocessed it for different sizes of JPEGs.
Mm-hmm.
So this back-end operation is kind of what I think about being kind of burst compute, in that, hey, here's 1,000 images, go work on it.
Right.
And
right.
go work on it across 50 different machines, and when you're done, we'll basically reduce
it down
to one
and
or two.
This solves such a fundamental problem that we see in so many large enterprises where they build their infrastructure for scale, but when they're thinking scale, they're thinking number of users, number of concurrent users, but not the actual processing that those users are going to demand from that particular system. So basically you can host your web application on premise as it is today and then move this one piece that's very processive intensive out into the cloud.
Correct.
That makes a lot of sense.
That doesn't come with its challenges. Obviously once you move data between on-premise, the security considerations, mm-hmm. Depending on the data itself, but also the amount of time required to push that data out, i.e. the amount of time to kind of get that to its endpoint so it can be calculated and then return the results,
mm-hmm.
can also, everything kind of needs to be balanced.
No, that makes sense.
That's a preposition.
So number 4 was elastic storage. And again, this one sounds pretty self-explanatory, but...
So I think the thing about, storage locally is very cheap. You can pick up a drive, probably a terabyte drive for like $100.
Yeah, that's about it. That's
probably
about
give
it.
Or take now.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's difficult with local storage is actually the management of that. And you've probably done this. You set up a file server and you put a couple of disks in, and then a couple of months later it's kind of reaching capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So then, we'll put some more disks into it and maybe we'll swap out some disks. And then a couple of months later that too reaches capacity. And in a very dynamic or busy environment, that can become pretty big, pretty worrisome.
Right.
I think one of the advantages in the cloud, especially when you look at how, say, Azure handles blob data or specific data storage for kind of binary or media files,
mm-hmm.
is you get this kind of elasticity. So, hey, we're just gonna keep chucking this thing at the cloud, and yes, of course, we've got to pay for it.
Right.
But ultimately, it's up to the infrastructure in the cloud to decide where that image gets stored,
mm-hmm.
and how it's partitioned, and how it's distributed across machines. And some other team, i.e. the people running the data centers, are responsible for inserting disks and making sure there's enough capacity for the whole thing.
So it lets your business focus more on what you're going to do with the data you're putting in, as opposed to burning resources to figure out how you're going to store all of it over time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you got it.
Makes sense. Makes sense. The final pattern that you defined, and this one I need you to explain, because I was trying to get my hands around it, but it's called interorganizational communication. Now this one sounds like it would be actually more on premise, but perhaps you can...
Yeah, there is a mix here. So so let me explain the problem. So let's imagine you've got organization A and org B, and they want to communicate together. So how do we do that today? Well, there's a few different options. We could set up a site here, and we could have kind of channels or things going back and forward. We might have some kind of weird kind of line going in between. There's several options, but a lot of those options require significant changes at both companies' firewalls. So, okay, well, we've got to accept an incoming request from this guy, so therefore I'm going to open up these ports. And now company C comes in, well, now the problem gets exponentially bigger. So one of the things that I was trying to highlight in the fifth pattern was some of the work that we're doing around the .NET service bus. And this is creating, in its simplest form, a kind of asynchronous bus in the cloud that not only organizations can subscribe to, but the underlying mechanisms of which make it very easy to not necessarily circumvent firewalls, but get messages to and from receivers that are behind firewalls.
Okay.
Obviously, as you know, we're kind of running out of IPv4, public IPv4 addresses. So a lot of the ISPs and the majority of organizations are doing network address translation today. So that further complicates it. And I think one of the things within this pattern is to say, well, how easily can we create this service bus in the cloud and then have organization A and B use it as a communication mechanism between it.
Okay, that makes that clears that up considerably. Okay, great. So this is a start, I imagine. This is an evolving. So I assume we're going to see more of these types of things coming out in the future.
Correct. I mean, this was really a handful, five patterns that we've kind of derived from various customers that we've been working with, and these are, as you said, very much starter patterns. Mm-hmm. We'll probably be back here maybe this time next year, and maybe there'll be 10.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Simon, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much for meeting with me today.
Thanks for
your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
That's it for this episode. I'm your host, Denny Boynton, and until next time, thanks for watching Arcast.tv.